Hey everyone, welcome back to the Spates Waterlad podcast. Another week and yes, another great guest. And without our good friends at Spates, this would not be possible. So next time you're choosing a beer, whether it's at the pub or the supermarket, make sure you make it a Spates just to thank them for bringing you this Waterlad podcast. Good on you, mate. Speaking of good supporters of the podcast, Pure Sport have been helping us out since the early days, founded by the lad Grayson Hart, who always had a mission to bring Pure Sport here to New Zealand shores. Now it's here, I strongly recommend you giving it a go. Their new product, Ultra Ashwagandha, is basically a wonder herb turned into a capsule, which has proven to increase energy levels, improve concentration, and reduce stress and anxiety. So if you're after any of those benefits in your life, head over to puresport.com and go and get yourself some ashwagandha or any of their other amazing products they have as well. Anyway, thanks for tuning in to another episode. Hope you enjoy this one. What a lad. Well, with the nation going crazy with this Up the Waz movement, I thought it was time to get some warriors on. What a lad. And who better than probably my all-time favourite warrior and one many regard as one of the best lads to have ever played the game. He played 6 seasons for the Warriors, coming off the back fence with intent each year before spending a year with the Raiders and shooting over to the UK where he spent a season with the Vikings. He announced his retirement from league at just 28 years old and since then has transformed himself into a full-on entrepreneur, having started up his own Portaloo company, Porter Kings, which has obviously taken over the world. What a lad this guy is. It is, of course, the great man, Charlie Garb. Welcome, mate.
Yeah, thanks, Jimmy. Thanks for having me. But, yeah, I've been pretty nervous all week or been nervous for a year since you asked me to come on.
Well, I reckon it's been like almost 2 years since we sort of penciled it in, but mate, what a day this is. Finally got you on. What a lad. How good.
Yeah, no, it's good. I've been following since day one, and obviously you started with Hiss and Aurora, and I was like, oh, you know, you had some good lads on. They got a bit more lad in them than me, and then I could see your guest list, you know, slowly coming down to my level. And I think, you know, it's off-season, so you're probably doing it pretty tough, and I don't know, I can't push you off for so long.
Oh, mate, well, I think this one's going to be massive because I've heard a few of your stories before, a few of your yarns, and, mate, it's some all-time stuff there. But like I mentioned in the intro, Porter Kings, I guess not many people would sort of pit you as a Portaloo entrepreneur, business owner, but how did you get into that?
Yeah, it definitely wasn't something I was planning when
lifetime dream, yeah.
You know, when the old boys come in and talk to you when you're playing, they're like, oh, you know, you should start something. But it wasn't, I definitely didn't have like a poo fetish or anything like that, but it just kind of happened. I was doing a bit of civil construction, waiting for concrete one day, and me being me, I just always yarning to everyone, and the Portaloo guy came and I was talking to him. He was a freaking character. And then I don't know, I just started, I was thinking, oh, how much does your boss make money? He goes, yeah, he's rich as. And I was like, could be a good copy and paste idea here. And yeah, just went with it, really.
So what decided you to make that leap? Because obviously, you know, people always have sort of ideas or they're like, oh, man, that could be a cool business or whatever. But not many people actually follow through with those sort of ideas. But you obviously have, and you've set it up and going strong.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah, I joke about it, but I think underneath it all, there's kind of that feeling like once you finish footy, like I finished, I wanted to finish, but you have that feeling when you go into work, like, I don't know, I did anyway after a couple of years, like, man, is this my life now? I just freaking get up and go to work and then come home and get ready for work again. So
yeah,
I was always wanting to do something with a bit of purpose. Whatever it was, like, it didn't really matter. Just wanted kind of something to work towards. Like in footy, you know, you're working towards obviously the goal to win a comp, and then there's a process to get there. You get up every day and do that. Whereas like work, I was just going through the motions. So yeah, Kind of had the idea, and I had good people around me too. I'm not like 100% owner, and we just kind of fed off each other, and it just gave me a bit of drive. So without being too serious, that's probably what it was. And like underneath it all, just the drive to I don't know, just have something to work towards and build yourself rather than just get an extra friggin' 50 cents at the end of the year.
Yeah, and what did you know about business? Did you know anything, or were you going in pretty cold?
Both my parents always ran small business. Growing up, I always, my old man had like a charter boat, and it was like fishing, but mostly parties.
Oh, yeah.
And then, yeah, I was working on that pretty much since I was at primary school. I remember I used to run the bar. This was always cash bar. And then yeah. I remember taking the, the national police out, and I was running the bar, and the guy was like, I think I was 13. He was like, are you 18? And I was like, yeah, I'm 18. And he goes, oh, that's all right, mate. I looked like you when I was 18 too.
What did you look like?
Oh, just a little friggin' fat chode. Yeah, I don't know. Pretty much looked like the guy that you wouldn't want your daughter to bring home. It'd be pretty embarrassing.
So you said you're on that boat from about five. That's pretty young, eh? Like handling money.
Yeah. So just got brought up on that. Obviously pocketing a bit here and there. but yeah, just brought up around that. I think even when I was playing NRL, my dad would make me come home and work in the off season. True. I used to hate it, man. I always found it embarrassing, you know, like, but I guess it gives you no ego. Friggin' serving kids on their 18th birthday and you're 24 years old in our play, and you're like, oh, would you like a spring roll?
Hey, that's probably why I got so many questions for the end about this boat. What's it called? It's got a name, hasn't it?
Oh, it was called Sweet George. He doesn't have it anymore. I think he got pushed out of all the red tape. Not allowed to have underage labour anymore.
Well, that's good stuff. But, well, we obviously heard a little bit about your upbringing from when you were about five, but take me back to even earlier than five. You know how I like to do this on the podcast. Give me the sort of rundown of Charlie Garb as a wee toddler.
Man, I actually don't remember being a toddler. Is that normal?
Concussions.
Yeah, concussions. Yeah, that's what it'll be. what do I remember about being a kid? Just one brother, one sister.
Yeah.
Yeah, my old man was always away working on the boat. He used to do heaps of trips down south at that time, like fishing and anything to earn a dollar. And yeah. I think, I don't know, I just remember like being at home and ringing my mum at work asking like, hey, can we heat up a microwave pizza? No, wait till I get home. Yeah, just those sort of memories. I remember
good memories.
Yeah, good memories. I remember, like, obviously, I don't know if you remember, but that was when toppers were a big thing. Toppers.
Oh, yeah.
Cordon bleus, which I still smash now.
Frozen ones, is it?
The frozen ones, yeah, I get the ones from BP now. I think my body's probably 15% cordon bleu. Yeah. Oh, where were we? Oh, when I was a kid, yeah. just playing footy. I was lucky enough to live close to heaps of friends who ended up being good footy players.
Oh, that's right.
So we were always at the park with the Proctors. And as I got older, friggin' Jordan Kahu and Lima Sopoanga, we used to, we didn't really know each other that well, but we used to meet up at the park.
Oh, true.
And man, we had some intense battles. And we were town boys and they were hut boys, and we always just sent them home packing, crying to mummy and daddy.
Because you mentioned your brother. Well, your brother's older than you, right?
Yeah, he's a year older, yeah.
True. So you guys must have had a lot of battles, even like when you weren't meeting up with the Proctors and Sopoangas of the world. Was it just you and your brother, Peter, is it, going head-to-head?
Yeah, Peter. Yeah. Yeah, what did we used to do growing up? Well, we used to always just play hallway rugby.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just narrow hallway for a few holes in the wall, crying. My dad would always just, I don't know, he was, I think he's used to froth on it. Yeah, so we'd play a bit of that outside. We used to have some big battles, me and Peter, and it was crack up. That sort of stuff is like funny, but you don't really remember it until you're bringing it up now, Jimmy.
Yeah. Were you good, like, as a young fella, were you good?
Nah, I wasn't. My brother was good.
Oh, yeah.
And I used to get in the rep teams because he was good. He was like one of those super fast for his age group kids.
Oh, yeah.
And then I guess they're like, ah, oh, you can bring your brother.
Oh, were you the same age group though?
No. Yeah. True. So I used to play up. I'm pretty sure I used to play up.
Oh, you must have been good.
No, I actually wasn't. I remember the year before it goes to tackle, must be like under sevens. Like he'd scored like so many tries and then it was like towards the last game of the year, someone passed it to me and I put it down, but I put it down at the 5 meter line. It was my only opportunity to score, and I just remember going home and crying. My dad was like, "Hey, you made some good touches."
And you still made the rep team.
Oh, yeah. As we got on, I don't think they do reps for under sevens, but I definitely wouldn't have got pulled into that one.
I was going to say, handing it out.
Yeah, man, it'll be like, it's pretty much like handing out the Deli M.
Oh, that is funny. And were you quite a big softball player too, by the sounds of things?
Yeah. I always loved softball. I played up until maybe I was 16.
Oh, yeah.
And then I remember actually, like, I thought I was pretty good at softball. And then there was like a North Island team. And I remember trialing for it. And TJ Perenara's old man Thomas was the coach.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, waiting, kid, you know, they at the thing, they're like, oh, you know, if you make it, you're going to hear from us. If you don't, we'll call you. And he called me. And he was like, you are the hardest one not to pick. I just remember being like, in my head, fuck you, brother. And then, after that, I didn't want to play anymore. I was gutted to TJ, brother. The old man got me out of softball, could have been a black sock. But, I actually, turns out I wasn't that good apparently, but.
Were you better at softball than you were league or rugby?
At the time, yeah.
Oh, true.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I don't actually know, like, because obviously there was probably about 10 guys playing softball in Wellington and I was probably, you know, in the top five.
Yeah. And then how did the sort of rugby progress? Because I know you're a bit of a rugby union star for Wellington College eventually.
Yeah, I don't know about star, but I did. I always loved playing rugby at school, and then it kind of, you know, you don't jump in the lineups and that when you're a junior and stuff like that, and then all the technique stuff comes in, and I kind of started falling behind. But I remember I played like under 65s when I was fifth form.
Oh yeah,
I tried for the under 15s, but didn't make the 18. So I just played league and rugby at the same time. League on Sundays.
Oh, yeah.
Played for Harbour City, played hooker. And I remember, frick, I think I took maybe like one scoot the whole season. I was just dishing it off the ground. But every now and then Julian would come play for us. Then we'd just carve up, yeah. It was one of those teams where like one week you might lose by 80 and then you get around, people get their mates to come and then you have a good red hot crack first team like Ramwick and you nearly knock them over and then you're like, oh yeah, man, are you guys going to come next week? And they're like, nah. Nah, okay, it's all good.
Did you see a pathway for yourself as a rugby union or league player at the time?
I think I always had goals to, but like, whether they're delusional or not, I'm not sure. You know, like every
obviously not.
Yeah, well, obviously not now. But at the time, like being the size I was and probably the skill level I was at, that everyone would have been like, "Nah, mate, nah, mate." Yeah, but I just held on to the dream. Obviously, yeah. I remember I had a good big growth spurt in my last year of school. And that was around the same time that Toyota Cup started on TV.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember I was, like, obsessed with the Toyota Cup. And I always just was like, man, I want to play that one day, blah, blah, blah. Even though I wasn't even, like, playing league or anything. Like, I want to play Toyota Cup. Like, what team? We used to have me and my brother because we shared a room up until we were I must have been 19 when I left home. So we were sharing a room. Yeah. And we used to have all the posters up. And then the light will be off. Okay, we'll go name for name on every team.
Yeah.
Have little competitions like that. Like, and I'll be like, oh, Russell Packer, Ben Madalena. And then we'll get down to friggin' all the out-of-it names. But And you'll be like, he's not on the team list. Turn the light on, look at it. He is. Yeah, so I had a few of those battles in there. But, yeah, no, I always had a dream to play in the Toyota Cup, which ended up happening. So.
That's crazy. So you were like a full-on rugby league fan and union as well, or was it mainly league? Was that your main, like, passion?
I don't know. I was like a union fan of like my school teams. I used to watch the first 15 and be like, fuck, you know, like we had Buxton at our school. Oh. I just remember thinking like, man, Buxton's the man.
Yeah.
And I'd see him, oh, do you want my sandwich? Like, you know, try and get to know him. And then we had like Dane Coles. I remember Dane Coles starting a fight at school. And I was just like, man, I got to do that. Like, I got to start more fights. The stuff, I don't know. So, yeah, so I wasn't really like looking up to any genuine rugby players at the time. It was more just like schoolboy stars.
Yeah, that's cracker. So did you start getting in a few more fights after witnessing the Niggle Goat in action from a young age?
Yeah, definitely. And then I was always pressured to instigate it from my old man, which I don't know. Like anything, it just manifests itself even if you don't want it to.
Oh, geez. So then how do you end up at the Warriors with the under-20s eventually?
Oh, well, I left school and then I started playing for the Hunters, which is like the local, because Harbour City, who I was playing for as a junior, they folded. I think they had too many mobsters. So there were, you know, seasonal players in and out. But so I went to the Hunters and had some like real mean senior players around me, and then just like not mean players, but just like mean, like, you know, hardcore rugby league dudes that teach you tit for tat, that sort of stuff. And I was playing for them and they were saying, oh, you know, you should, there weren't many young kids playing. So like, you know, you could make it. And I'm there. I'm like, yeah. But all the best kids are playing union. And then I ended up playing for the Orcas men's team that year.
Oh, true.
And then I just made my own video and sent it to, because people kept telling me like, oh, the Raiders are watching, this team's watching, they're going to talk to you. And I was thinking like, yeah, they must be because these people are saying it. But it got to like the end of the season, I had nothing. And I was like, fuck, like real deflated. And then I was like, maybe they weren't watching. Maybe these guys are just all shit, which they were. So I just made like a highlight video of just friggin', it wasn't much highlights. There was no line breaks. It was just kind of like aggressive stuff, like a kid like trying to start a fight with a guy that's going to give him a hiding. And then all the clubs that I sent it to got back because I sent it to all the Aussie clubs.
Oh, that's right.
And then I think someone from the Titans sent it to someone, because I didn't send it to the Warriors because I was like, man, if these guys didn't see me playing in the national comp, or they did see me, they're not going to want to watch my video.
Yeah.
But they sent it to John Acklin. Then he rang me, said, do you want to come up for a trial? He was the first one that got back.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I'll come up. So I went up and stayed up there in like the share house. They had like a house that was owned by, I think it was owned by like Clinton Torpy. And they just like put the kids in there. Well, not kids, but like 18, like first year away from home. And like no parent, no kegel or anything. And like I remember it was just like washing from like Benny Matz reckons it was from like his first year there, which was like 4 years before. Like the wash house was just like so ratchet, like holes in the floorboards. And I was sleeping in this room outside that was all it was all glass. It was like a glass house.
Yeah.
And it was so hot, like, and the sun would come up at like 5 a.m. and I'd just be like, fuck, like, mum and dad would ring, like, how's that? I was like, yeah, no, it's good, I'm up early every day. But it was friggin' scody as. And then, I got dragged along the whole preseason. And then that's when the other Aussie clubs, they sent some offers through. And then I just went up to John, and I said, oh, I'm going to go to the Tigers. And he was like, nah, mate, stay here, blah blah blah. Gave me a contract, so yeah, ended up staying there the year.
Far out, that's crazy. So you've cut your own clips, sent them to every NRL team, and got your contract that way. That's crazy, eh?
Yeah, it is crazy. I was lucky. I had like my old man pushing me because that was back in the day where like you didn't really have a computer. I had to just take DVDs of games and write down like 1 minute 20 seconds, and I took it to like a film producer. He cut it off because you had to have like a, I don't know, even know how it worked, but it was like dubbing a tape. And then I got 16 DVDs printed, and I couriered them to Australia with a reference from my mate Tim Cahill, who played Bardicard with Benny Madalena in it, and Russell. Wow. He was like, I've played with Ben and Russ, and he's in the same caliber. you have my word, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, you got a good reference, blah, blah, blah. We'll give you a contract.
Far out. That is crazy, eh? And then so you go to the Warriors, you sign up there, and is that the year you're playing Toyota Cup?
Yeah. So I don't know. Must have been 2010. Mm. Straight into it, Toyota Cup. So cool, like, playing in Oz every second week, traveling over, I don't know, it was just all new, like everything's new, like going on a plane as a team, and the competition was good, like the players, like all, oh yeah, it was just cool, like when you look at like the grand final players who were playing against the semi-final, they're all like the stars now.
Yeah.
So it was just cool rubbing shoulders and then getting to know those guys.
Did you feel like you were good enough to be there? Because obviously it had happened all pretty quick for you.
I did, because I was playing men's, and the boys that were playing were mostly playing age grade.
Oh, true.
So yeah. when I came into it, they were like, oh, you're playing men's, blah, blah, blah. But I felt I had confidence in my own self, like that I was like a good 20s player.
Yeah.
And I was always like super aggressive and just did everything that if the coach told me to do something, I'd do it. That's kind of what I didn't doubt myself at under 20s level.
Yeah, but then obviously when you make the step up, is that when it all sort of, the confidence levels sort of get a bit of reality check?
Yeah, I guess so. I remember getting to the end of the season and they were kind of like, Ivan was the NRL coach at the time, and they were, I'm in an iron if I was going to get re-signed. And then I think John Hart was like the director of football.
Oh, yeah.
And then he goes, oh, I think you still need to do like your apprenticeship. Like you're still doing a lot of things wrong. He goes, go over to Australia and then come back next year. And I was like, nah, I think I'll just go and work on the boat.
Oh, really? Were you looking to give it up?
Yeah, because I don't want to go to Australia without, like, because most of our team got NRL contracts because we won.
Yeah, how many? Like, what sort of percentage got them?
Well, I think out of the 17 that played the grand final, 15 went on to play NRL.
Oh, far out.
Yeah, so it was pretty high percentage. And probably maybe 13 got NRL contracts or were young enough to play again. Oh, so I was just like, there was a couple of other boys that did what I did and went over and played cup and then ended up kicking on, but I don't know, it kind of like dents your confidence a bit, like when you see like your friends going this way and you're kind of going sideways.
Yeah.
But I ended up going over to win a Manly anyway. My manager at the time, Frank Endicott, he sort of did out. I didn't even really know what it was, the Queensland Cup. I was just thinking like, oh, it's just like local league in Australia. And then I got there, I flew over and then same thing, stayed in a house that they had. Was like real homesick, but started working at the port straight away, like unloading containers. Frick, it was just so hard.
So it wasn't a league contract, you were still working.
It was a contract, like I think I'd maybe get like $800 a game or something, and then free accommodation, but it wasn't really like, I wasn't looking at it like, oh, this is all good for a game. It was like, oh, I just want to play NRL, but they kept saying like, oh, this is the NRL, then the next what best is Queensland Cup, but you don't know because you've never heard of it.
Yeah.
And then I remember going to training and just being like, oh yeah, I'll try and friggin' bully these guys, and then I was just getting fucking smoked.
Oh yeah.
Like, dude, it's not till you get over that you realise like how tough the Aussie League guys are. It might be the same with Union, I don't know, but the leagueies, like all through the grades, they're just friggin' tough. And just they're keen for a scrap. They're just, I don't know. They're different to Kiwis, I reckon. They're just hard.
Yeah. So is that? Do you look back at that sort of year over there and think it was like the best thing for you?
Yeah, at the time I didn't, because Paul Green was our coach, who just passed away, and the Cowboys coach, and that he was he was an awesome coach, but we lost our first few games, and I was thinking like, man, stuff this, but stuck on. We ended up winning quite a few in a row, and then we won. We ended up winning the final. And I was like, I remember having like a pretty good game in the final, and just doing, or not a good game, but I did like a lot of big hits. And for me, that was like, yeah, I've had a mean game. Like,
that's good highlights to send to your next clubs.
Yeah. I always just used to like catch up with like my mates back in Auckland and be like, oh, how'd you go? And I'd just send them just videos to my tackle. They're like, man, bro, you're going to get picked up soon. But really, like, I'm just walking everywhere. Yeah, so it was like that. And then I didn't get anything, and I came home, and I was like, I can't go again. Like, like if I didn't get picked up, we just won the comp. My dad was like, you going again, don't forget why you're there, blah, blah, blah. I was like, in my head, I'm like, fuck you. But, no, it was good for me. I went back over.
Oh, did you do 2 years?
I did 2 years, yeah. Oh, that next year I went over, and I trained so hard. I remember like being in my room, and I would just run most nights, even though we'd do like a tough-ass preseason. I'd kind of like have dinner, and then I'll get to like 11 o'clock at night, and I'd just go for a road run. Mm. I remember just getting super fit and playing pretty much whole preseason games and having mean stats, which I didn't used to have.
Yeah.
And then I played for the Queensland Residents team, which is pretty much like the Queensland team that hasn't played more than a few NRL games. So there's lots of NRL players in there and Queensland Cup players. And then that was cool. And I was like, oh, I've made the Queensland team. Surely I'll get picked up. And then we won the final again that year. And I had a good game, and nothing happened. And then I was like, fuck, like, what's doing? And I ended up ringing. I remember just being like real fucked off of like just life in general.
Yeah.
And then I was like, man, the Warriors said that I would come back, you know, they'd pick me up again. And I remember ringing them up and being like, hey, like I talked to Dean Bell, and I was like, you said if I go away, then you'll pick me up again once I learn the game. I said, oh, you know, I played for Queensland Residents and blah, 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 like naming the stuff like they care. But he was like, oh, did we? Who said that? Like, nah. And he was like, oh, he goes, oh, come back for a trial. He goes, come back through the preseason, not paying you. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, sweet. So I ended up texting my mate Sam Lousy. He was like, yes, come live with me. And I was like, oh, okay, sweet. So I friggin' went to his house and slept on the floor between him and his brother the whole preseason. Man, I got bit by like 1,000 fleas. No shit. Like, you know, when you get goosebumps, like how many bumps you have, that was flea bites for me. Like, the fleas were probably like, holy heck, we got some friggin' white meat here. Let's go. Let's go, boys.
Just went to town on you, the fleas.
Yeah, man. I was the opposite of Mortine, bro. They were loving me. They went to town. It was friggin' embarrassing. I remember turning up to preseason, and everyone was like, oh, God, we haven't seen you since blah, blah, blah. Anyway, they're like, okay, we're going out to the track. You got to wear your old gear. They'd send out a message like, you got to wear your old Warriors gear. And I had nothing. And the guy, the manager, who's still the manager now, Dan Floyd, he goes, oh, come to the office, I got some gears. I was like, fuck yeah, I'm going to get Warriors gear straight away. And he pulled out the rankest old polo shirt, like, for promos. He gave me that. And, like, just the training shorts were all right. And the shoes were, like, those, like, just big, bulky Asics that you'd wear, like, our old man would wear, like, cross-country walking. And I was like, fuck, okay, all good. Like, put it on. And then we had to, like, this is when Matt Elliott came.
Yeah.
And then they were saying, like, oh, you know, the Warriors have a bro culture. Like, we're going to train that out of you boys, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, what's going on here? And we ended up, the first session, we did, like, 2100s.
Yeah.
And then we did 15 200s, then 10 400s.
Oh.
And people were just collapsing. Like, people were just collapsing. I remember Saliba Havili just like leaning on the fence the whole time. And we were just so fucked. And then they're like, all right, sweet, into wrestling now. This was all new to me, like into wrestling, did wrestling. Yeah. And they're like, okay, back to the field. Ruben Wookie's taking news for this friggin' whatever it is that he was doing.
How were you going at this point? Were you dominating it?
I was going hard. Like, I was going so hard because I was on trial. Like, yeah. And I was like, these guys are watching me. But looking back, they were probably just like, who's this guy? Who's the guy in the polo?
Fans come to train with us.
Yeah, they're probably like, oh, that's nice. Someone's brought this kid along. That's nice. Oh, yeah. But, I went so hard. It was me. There was a couple of us on trial. Me, Sawia Matangi, Nate Petteru, and a couple of other guys who were just real crack up Auckland club guys.
Yeah.
And then, I just remember me and Sawia were always having battles. Like, we were just, we would just train so hard, like, and just push ourselves to the limit every single session. Yeah. Because we're like, oh, you know, we've only got one chance. Obviously, he probably had a bit more fire in the belly just coming out of prison. here's me coming over from, hey, Wayne, you picked me up.
Mate, you're coming off the flea floor.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Just as tough.
Yeah, I was probably like blood doping from the fleas.
It's probably more comfortable in prison.
Yeah, true. I should ask him about that. What's the food like in prison? Oh, yeah? You got fleas? Yeah. Nah. Where were we? Where were we, Jammer?
What a pathway, though. Like, that's unbelievable. So you're winning everything. You win the Toyota Cup. You go over to Aussie. You win two comps over there. You can do no wrong. You're playing well. You're smashing everyone. And it's still a real battle for you to make it back into the Warriors. It seems like almost unfair.
In my mind, it was unfair. But I actually don't know what it was. There was obviously something like that. I probably wasn't I don't think the Warriors were looking in the Queensland Cup anyway. Like, I don't think that's, they kind of just have such a big nursery in Auckland, you know what I mean? And they still had really good 20s players coming through.
Yeah.
They're probably like, oh, we didn't sign him. Charlie who? Charlie who? What, the guy on the polo? Did he just play for us? And we're like, yeah, mate, won the comp, what the fuck? But, I don't know. They just weren't looking. And then, I did get an opportunity to do the preseason. And obviously went ham. And I remember the trial I did play, because you kind of just get one trial when you're a young guy or a guy on trial. And then because of injuries, I got to trial in the end game where the best players play, you know, round one team.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah,
I only got 10 minutes at the end versus the Broncos down in Dunedin. But the Warriors were already winning, and I got on in the last 10, and I think the Broncos were already, like, pretty knackered. So, like, I ended up having a good trial, and I scored a try, which was probably my first try ever. And then I was like, holy, I just scored a try in the NRL trial. Like, surely, is anyone watching? And then didn't hear anything. And then I remember walking to training like a week or two later, and then Dean Bowell just hit me up in the car park. And then he was like, do you want to be a Warrior? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, yeah, sign this.
Oh, that's right.
And he even took me through the contract. I was like, yeah. And then, yeah. And then he was like, sweet, you've just signed for 2 years. And I was like, okay, sweet, thanks, mate.
Then, far out, just like that, done.
Just like that, yeah, signed up in the car park. And I remember ringing Frank Endicott, the manager, and I go, oh, Dean just gave me a I just signed his contract. And he was like, how much is it? And I was like, whatever, I think it was like 55 grand in match payments or something. And he was like, oh, that's not too bad. I was like, yeah, thanks for sorting that out. But really, it wasn't, you know.
No idea about it.
Yeah.
And did you play that year? Was that the year you're instantly into it?
Yeah. Well, I played New South Wales Cup most of the year. Looking back, I wasn't in the top 25. So you're not allowed to play until there's no one in the top 25 that can cover that position.
Oh, okay.
Not that I should have been playing or anything, but I ended up playing when, what happened? I kept being 18. This is what happened, Jammer. I kept being 18th man.
Yeah.
Because I was going well in Cup. We had a good Cup team, Auckland Vulcans, and I enjoyed playing that. We used to travel to Sydney every week and play, fly Emirates, and there was like heaps of club guys there, so they would always just get on the piss heavy after the game.
Yeah.
And I was just like a mad sheep. I would just follow. And then Emirates, everyone would just get on it on the way back, blah, blah, blah. Like the NRL boys used to love coming down and playing Cup because you get so looked after. And like no one at that stage, no one was watching. Like they weren't, yeah. They would never be like, hey, friggin' who played Cup recently? I don't know. They wouldn't be like, oh, Filetti Mateo's pissed at the airport. It was just like the norms.
Yeah.
And then I remember just playing that. And then they go, oh, you're 18th man. You got in over to Perth. And I was like, oh, yeah, sweet. This will be all right. Go to Perth, fly first class, which is the first time. Went over. And then they didn't say anything about playing. And then till the night before the game, they go, oh, and by the way, I think it was might have been Russell or something. Oh, Russell's pulled out and Gubby's going to debut.
Oh,
and true. I remember just being like I was just so shocked.
Yeah.
Just so pumped. It was like such a crazy amount of emotion had just come over you because you're not expecting it. Like I hadn't been prepping the whole week. I think I probably just, I don't know, just been eating cordon bleus and up and goes. I wasn't on that match fit diet, but it's all up here, Gemma.
And how did you go?
Yeah, I went good. And not many games I can say I went good, but my debut, I went good. We played versus the Rabbitohs. And I remember they had like Sam Burgess, all the Burgess brothers, Greg Inglis. They had a friggin' mean team. Isaac Luke at hooker, who was like my favorite player at the time.
Right.
And I remember I got on and I went to do like the kickoff run and that went like so high and like 90 caught it real close to the line. And then I was just steaming onto it. And then like he dummied it and I was like, fuck yeah. And then like, as I was saying, like, fuck yeah for not passing, Sam Burgess was just like flew past me and I was like, that was like, that could have been the first and last of my NRL career if he had given it. So Nugget had a friggin' he had a game that game too. I remember he bumped off Reynolds and knocked him out. But yeah, it was all a blur. Like even when I was tired, just keep going. So it was just mean.
Yeah, and you did play what, 39 games for the Warriors? So like pretty good tally in the end.
Yeah.
What were your favourite moments?
There was so much fun times,
yeah.
Like in the team rooms, on away trips at training and stuff. But there were also like some, man, we had some tough seasons, like where I think we went through three coaches. That pretty much says how shit we were on.
In 1 year.
Oh, we did go for, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
All
right. yeah. Because Matt Elliott didn't last a year.
Yeah.
Then Cappy came. He got thrown in the deep end, and I thought he was a mean coach, but the results just didn't go his way. And then Stephen Kearney came later on. But what were the mean memories? I don't know. You'd have to bring some stories up.
No, I could just imagine you being one of those guys who did love like the team camaraderie. I've heard that you're always the last man to leave the sort of team base, always just yarning to the lads or telling stories and just loving the company of all the other boys.
Yeah, for sure. That I think that was definitely the highlight of my career, the locker room moments, and that's probably where I did my best work on the on the group chats and whatnot. I do miss the group chats and I don't know, I used to just go to, like you say, go to training early and just like link up with whoever's around. And they'll be like stretching on the roller and I'll be like, yeah.
Pop up.
Yeah.
Where'd you come from? And you obviously grew a pretty big following too as well. Like the fans loved you. They loved something about you where they all sort of got in behind you and Charlie Gubb was like a lot of guys' favourite players.
Yeah, I think it was from Mount Smart, probably just the intensity. I always just was just like the complete opposite to how I was off the field. Once I was on the field, man, I was just so intense and did some crazy shit that I'm like, why did I do that? But and also, like, I used to get smashed a lot too, which they probably respected, you know, like, oh, mate, he can get smashed, I can get smashed. Like, they're just a fan of the everyday man having a crack.
Yeah. And did you love that? Did you love that side of the game, just running it hard, running, getting smashed, smashing people?
Not really, yeah. Like, I didn't really. Game day was definitely my least favorite day of the week. Like,
oh, true, yeah.
Yeah, because I used to get, like real bad anxiety before the games. Once I was playing, I was sweet, but it was just the build-up. I remember, like, even since I left home, like, my old man would always ring me, like, on a Tuesday, and I'd be like, fuck, he's ringing. And he'd just, like, start trying to jam me up like Vince Lombardi, like, on a Tuesday, and I'd be like, stop doing this, like, and then he'll be like, and go fucking hard. And I just remember, like, just trolling him. I'm not gonna go hard, I'm not even gonna try, you know. And he'd take it seriously and be so fired up. And then my mum would text me, like, oh, dad says you're not gonna try. But obviously, I ended up going hard, and he probably put that fire in the belly. But yeah, I don't know. Where were we?
That's funny, because you are. Because then, what ended up happening there? Like, you end up going to the Raiders. What happened at the Warriors? Why'd you leave?
Oh, so what actually happened was, I had signed a 2-year contract before Steve Kearney had got there.
Oh yeah.
And then there was kind of like an era, like, pretty much like my first one, I didn't read it properly. He was probably like, fuck, let's just pull the wool over this guy's eyes. And then I signed it and then read it, and I was like, oh, actually, in the second year, I get less than the first year. Like, it was all to do with match payments. Like, if I played, like, say, 15 games, which I ended up doing in the first year, then my second year's not even worth as much. And then Dean Bauer was the guy in charge of, and he was a good dude, like, me and Dean, like that. He was like, oh, if you do that, he goes, if you do play the 15, I'll just screw it up and we'll renegotiate. And I was like, oh, okay, sweet. But I didn't put it on paper. But, like, me, Frank Endicott, and him shook hands. Oh, and shit. Wayne Scurrow was in there, whether he says he was or not, he was in there. And then I played the 15 games, and it came to the preseason next year. And Thing got the sack, or he got pushed, or he left on his own terms. I don't know. Dean Bell left. And then Jim Doyle came in and started running it. And it was like, I was on, like, shit money. So, like, every little bit helped. And I was like, oh, Jim, this is the deal, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes, oh, it's not on paper. And I go, yeah, but it's a handshake. Like, it's a handshake. A handshake's a handshake.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, we'll look into it. So I started doing kind of the preseason. And then I was like, are you looking into it? And he was like, mate, get out of here. Like,
yeah.
Not thing. And I remember just thinking, like, man, fucking, you're so full of shit, you cunt. Like, that's what I'm not pretty intense when I click the switch. And then I was just off him. And then Steve Kearney came that year. And when he first got there, he goes, oh, I don't see you on my team, like, which is fair enough. He told me, like, pretty much on the first day, like, you can go look for another NRL club. And I was, like, gutted, because I, like, loved the Warriors and I was going good. Like, I had played pretty much the whole season the season before under Kepi, and I got suspended, so I had, like, heaps of time off. I was training hard. And then he came in and was like, oh, I don't see you on my team, which I respect, because he told me early. And then I ended up couple of days later getting a 2-year contract with the Sharks, and I was like, oh, I need you to sign the release. And then he goes, oh, I just found out that the club's got a policy, we can't release you until we've signed a replacement. And then I was like, okay, sweet. And then I left, and I got home, and I was thinking, man, how are they gonna find an experienced front rower on minimum wage? And then I was like, kept going to training, and I was going, like, have you found anyone? And then he was like, not yet, mate. It's looking like we're not going to find anyone. And I was, like, thinking, like, man, what the hell? Because preseason's so hard. Like, you have to be extremely motivated to get through an NRL preseason. And I was like, it was hard to bust my ass when the coach is pretty much saying, like, you're not on the team, you're just here because we can't replace you. And I was like, I ended up stopped going to training for a bit because I wanted them to rip my contract up so I could shoot off to the Sharks, which was on, I was like triple the money over there and feel wanted.
Yeah.
And then Mooks changed his mind. He goes, oh, actually, you're going to start round one. And I was like,
change a tune.
I was like, okay, that's all right. So I ended up staying, but during the year I kept asking about the money, which maybe it would have ended up being like 30 grand in the end.
Oh, yeah.
30 grand difference, but it was, I don't even know what it was, the difference between like 100 and 130, which is decent when you're freaking, when you're freaking cucka. And then they just brushed me, eh? And then I was like, they always had like, they were like, you know, if you're not on the bus, get off now. And I just remember always just being like, I'll just get off. Like I wasn't buying into, I was going my hardest, but I just knew that everything that was coming from the top down wasn't actually, like, they preach integrity and stuff like that, but they couldn't even honor a handshake for such a insignificant amount to the club. But it was more just the integrity of the handshake. They wouldn't honor it.
Yeah.
And then halfway through that year, which was my last year at the Warriors, they offered me a 2-year contract. And it was actually good money, but I was a bit stubborn in the head. And I said, oh, put 30 grand on one of the years for this year, which I lost. And they're like, no, we're not doing that. And I was like, oh, sweet. Well, if you're not even going to do that out of respect, I'm not staying. And it was like a little bit sour. I was a bit sour.
Mm.
I think they were probably like, who cares? And then I ended up saying I was leaving. And I was so pissed off. I remember that when they find out who's leaving, that you do interviews, like in the media, and they're like, oh, you must be sad you're leaving. And I was like, nah, I'm happy. Those real, like, salty ones. Nah, I'm happy. I'm leaving. And then, like, 2 hours later, there was, like, an article that came out. And I was like, Charlie Gubb's happy he's leaving the Warriors. Like, what shape is that? And I was, like, just sacking it. Like, oh, fuck it. It doesn't look good. But to the Warriors faithful, I love the Warriors. I was just salty at the time.
So how did the Raiders come up?
Oh, because I was originally going to go link up with the Cowboys with my old head coach, Paul Green.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, yeah, no, I'll sort you out. 2-year contract, like agreed on the money, which was like all good. And then I was still like scared of him at the time. Like you know, like principal thing, because he used to like freaking grill me when I was young.
Yeah.
I remember one time he came to my house because I was like out of form. The house in Brisbane, and it was like sat me down. I was just about to have lunch, and then he like sat me down in the lounge and he's like, mate, we got to sort out, like, you know, you started so well, blah blah blah. And I was just like, oh, I just gotta do something in the kitchen. I had the deep fryer going and I had mini hot dogs in there, and he was like, you fat cunt. And he was like, this is why you're out of form. And I was just like putting the hot dogs on a paper towel, just coughing it, thinking like, oh, hopefully he's cooled down. And then he made me throw the deep fryer away. I got back in form. And that's how scared I was of him. He was just like almost like a father figure.
So you signed with the Raiders.
Yeah, signed on the Raiders for a deep fryer. He said he was going to give me a 2-year contract. And I was like, okay, sweet. And then as the time ticked on, I didn't hear from him. And then I got Frank to contact them, and they were like, he was like, oh, they're not getting back. They're not getting back. And then Ruben Wiki, who I got on with well, he was like, man, I'll sort you out with the Raiders. Because Ruben was coaching the Cup team at the time, or like the trainer. I finished the season in Cup. That's when Bunty started playing men, and he came in, and he was playing way better than me. And then so I finished the last few games in Cup, and then Ricky rang me and he's like, I heard you want to be a Raider. And I was like, yeah, brother. And he's like, Yeah, we got no money left in the cap, so it'll have to be minimum. And I was like, oh, another year on minimum wage. Okay. I'm a sucker for a minimum contract. And then so I signed that. And then stuff gets leaked all like so fast. Like I signed it and then like Paul Green rung me. And it was like, what the fuck? Did you just sign with the Raiders? Like the same day. And I was like, yeah. And then he was like, you said you were coming here for 2 years. I was like, oh, I didn't hear from you. Like, I didn't hear from you and I was scared. And he goes, no, I was sorting out. I had to get rid of maybe Patrick Kafusi. The brother of Felice. He goes, I had to sort that out. He's going to the Storm, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I didn't know. I didn't know, Greeny. But I was like pleading with him, like, don't hit me. He was like, I thought our friendship was worth more than that. You ring Sticky and tell him you're not coming. And I was like, I can't, Greeny. Like, I'm a man of my word. And he's like, what about the word you give to me? Like, it was like one of these conversations, bro. It was so hard for me.
Yeah.
Because I was like, who do I? I just told him that I was signing and I just signed with the Raiders. But then, like, Greeny's my day one. But, like, also, he left, like, he was having, I think they just won the comp, or he was having a mean season, Greeny was, so he was probably on heaps of money, not worried about. And the bar was the one worried about what the next step for me was.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh. In hindsight, I should have just rung Greeny and been like, are we still on? But, like, you don't think clearly sometimes when you're under pressure.
Yeah.
And then, so I just went with, I was like, oh, I can't, Greeny, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, I'm off you. Like, he was actually off me.
True.
Yeah, he was off me, bro. And then that was hard for me.
Yeah.
But I went to Sticky, who I got on with, me. Went to Raiders and ended up loving my time there. But I always kept thinking, like, man, should have just picked up the phone. So that's probably a lesson for everyone. If there's something you're not sure about, just grab your sack and just ring up.
Yeah, and that was something you did sort of your whole career, like early days ringing up the Warriors and sending your clips out to all the teams. Like, you were confident enough to do that. So it was sort of out of character not for you to call.
Yeah, yeah.
That's probably why you felt so sort of bad about it, eh?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I actually don't know what it was. You just have, like, those turning points in your life, I think. Like, and I'm like, why the frick didn't I just ring Greeny? Like, we got on good. Like, we were mates. Yeah. But I think I was just like, maybe I felt like nagging. I don't know. Like, are you going to give me a contract? Like, that's not really how professional sport works. Are you going to give me a contract? And then Sticky's like, mate, we'd love to have you. We would, like, he's like, just talking out his ass, you know, like, fuck, you fucking, we need, like, aggression, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, do you see that in me? Do you see that? What else do you see in me? But, and I signed there, and it ended up being all good.
Yeah, well, you said you loved it. You didn't play a huge amount over there, like, hardly played at all, to be fair. I think you were suspended for a fair bit, late shot on the best player of the last decade, Cleary.
Yeah, yeah. So I played my first game, and then I tore my groin off the bone.
Oh, is that a legit injury? Because someone said the real fact was a circumcision.
No, I haven't had that injury yet. Had that, but it could be on the cards. Could be on the cards, guys. DM me with the pros and cons. I did. I tore it off. I always had, like, groin, like, sore, what is it, like, pubis or real bad groin injuries. I was always rehabbing it. Then I played versus the Knights, and I went to, like, get up from a tackle, and it just tore off the bone. And played on, obviously. Played on, let in a try, and then jogged back, and then got dragged, and then went and got scanned, and they were like, oh, the whole thing's come off. I think it's, like, connected to your thigh, like, down your groin, like, from up top, and it had pulled off, and it took about 8 weeks to reattach. And then I came back and played maybe 4 games, and then in the last game versus Penrith, I did a pretty dirty tackle on Nathan Cleary by accident, because what's his name, Sticky, just kept saying, like, I need you to pressure him, you know, just when he's kicking, pressure him. And that was all that was in my mind. Yeah. And then he's put up a mean bomb, but he stayed in the air for too long. And I attacked his legs in the air. And then I just got punished for that because I already had like a real bad loading system at the judiciary, like whenever you do something.
Yeah.
And I'd done a lot in previous years and then got a big ban. And then I just remember like mentally just going downhill, getting like copying it. Remember the one that pissed me off the most was because Penrith was like blowing up, and then I remember me just like bite, like I always bite back, and I just started barring up. And then after the game, Trent Merrin was saying something. I said, "Oh, sorry, bro, I didn't mean to do that." And he goes, "Nah, it's just footy, mate. It's nothing." And then I seen a clip on Fox Sports, and he was like, "It's the most disgusting tackle I've seen this year." And I was thinking, "You fucking fat pooper." I was so pissed off. And then, I got hammered for ages, and that took like a big toll mentally, like people just saying stuff about you, you know, when you're not actually, like, I wasn't a big name player,
yeah,
but I was getting a lot of coverage for being dirty,
yeah,
which probably some of it was true, but a lot of it was said from people who have no idea.
And that's one thing that you've always sort of, not enjoyed about rugby league, or is that media side of thing, even professional sport, is that media. I know you're not a huge fan of the Fox commentary or some of the stories they bring out. Also Keyboard Warriors, I know you're so anti against all of these guys, so like, was that sort of the start of all that for you?
No, I think I've always been just words hurt me probably the most.
Yeah.
So if someone is saying stuff about someone that I know, like, it just makes my blood boil.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it is. It's just how I am. Like, whereas I don't really, like, other stuff I'm not bothered on. Do you know what I mean? Like, if someone's like, "Oh, fucking so-and-so just rear-ended your car," I'll be like, "Oh, man, that sucks." But if they're like, "Oh, so-and-so said this about you," I'll be like, "What?"
Do you still get into the social media battles? And I know you're renowned for making burner accounts and stuff to troll the trolls.
Not really. I don't need a burner account because obviously I don't have a blue tick. So I still, definitely reply to people that piss me off. And my wife's always like, "Why do you do that? You feel better when you don't." And I'm like, "I actually feel better making them feel bad. Like, it's just how I'm built."
Well, that's good stuff. So then you eventually move over to the UK and try and give Super League a go. Is this just because you're basically sick of the media? You're at a bit of a bottom and you just want to try somewhere new?
No. It wasn't like to do with the media. Like, I don't know where you got that narrative, Jimmy. It was just, I was sick of just, I was mentally down. Like, I'd given everything to the Warriors. Like, we had a falling out. I could have stayed there for 2 years. I think it was just a snowball. Like, I went to the Raiders, like, "Fuck yeah, fresh start." Mm. Blah, blah, blah. Got that injury. Came back, started playing week to week. Then got banned again. But it wasn't something I intended to happen. And I got banned. I was getting hammered. And I was like, fuck, like, I'm. And I remember, like, talking with some other guys about it, and they were like, "The way you play, you're always going to get long bans now, because just the way the judiciary was run. So, like, if it was going to be 2 weeks, it would be 6 weeks for me," just with the loading. And then I was like, yeah, I don't know, it was just in my own head. And then my manager was like, "Oh, do you want to go to the UK?" I was like, "Yeah." And then he goes, "Oh, I got you this good deal," which was like a grouse deal, like too good for me. But I was like, I went to Ricky because he said, "Oh, you can stay here for another couple of years, but like, it's not going to be good money, so I don't want to disrespect you
because
you're getting older." And I was like, "Oh, I do want to stay, but also I want some money." So, and he goes, oh, if I was you, I would go to the UK because that's like a really good deal. Yeah. And that was with Lee Centurions at the time. They were called Lee Centurions, and they had like a millionaire owner because they're all privately owned over there, the clubs. It's not like they're run by the union or something. People buy the clubs and they try and run them profitably.
Mm.
And this guy's pumping heaps of money, and he signed a few NRL players, and Bodine Thompson was there, who I got on with well. He was like, yeah, come over, bro. And I was saying, me and my wife were like, yeah, yeah, we'll go over. And we planned on like having kids in there over there, and just signing there for a few years. So I signed, and then I remember right before I flew out, Bodine messaged me on WhatsApp, and he was like, bro, I think we're going into liquidation. They can't, like, the owner's just like gone off the grid, and he's not paying anyone. And I was like, what? I didn't really understand it, like, because I was like, oh, isn't it owned by like the competition?
Yeah.
And he's like, nah, it's not how it's blah blah blah. And then it came out in the media because he had messaged me, and he was like, looking forward to having you here, blah blah blah. And then I was like, yeah, bro. And he was like, what's it? He was like, do you want this car? And I was like, an Audi Jeep. And I was like, yeah, bro.
That'll yeah, do. Bro.
Make sure it's automatic. this is like the convos we were having. Like, and yeah. He was seemed like a good dude. And then all that stuff came out. And I was like, just remember messaging him on WhatsApp. And I was like, F you, blah, blah, blah. Like, just blowing out. And then I was like clicking on it, like information, read at, so I know he was reading it.
Yeah.
And then... yeah, and then I was just rattled. I went back to Wellington because obviously that there was no contract. And then Frank Endicott was like, we can chase it up with lawyers because, like, officially, like, your contract is lodged and there might be a way to make one of his other companies pay you. And he goes, but we'll have to fly over out of our own pocket and sort that out. And he goes, the other option is you can try get someone else to pick up the contract.
Yeah.
And then... Witness Vikings ended up picking it up, and I was like looking at their team, like Christian Inu, Aaron Jeremiah, Chris Houston, like all these guys I used to watch. I was like, oh yeah, this will be mean. And then I flew over, got picked up, and I was living with a Papua New Guinea guy called Wellington Albert, who was a friggin' awesome dude. And I was like, what's it like here? Is it good? We a good team? And he was like, nah, bro, not a good team. And I was like, they couldn't really understand, like, his definition of good team. And then went to the changing room. I remember it was, like, Christian Inu was like, bro, thanks for coming. I was like, what's it like? And he goes, yeah, we've lost 18 in a row. We're playing in this million-pound game where you play versus, like, the people from the lower grade, and if you lose, you go down,
relegation.
And they take $1 million out of your salary account.
Oh, take a million.
And I was like, fuck. And I just remember like thinking I was like gonna be like a just carve, but it was freaking hard, bro. Like, they're like physical, like guys definitely on steroids. And it was mean, like, I loved it. Like, it was, we played on like AstroTurf, like old as like tennis court style.
Yeah.
And I just remember just getting cut up, and yeah, I went a bit downhill from there. I got knocked out a couple of times and they just kept making me play. Yeah, it was kind of like, it was a good experience. Like, it made me realize how good things were in the NRL in comparison.
Yeah. Was that the first, few concussions that you'd had? Was that the sort of first experience with concussion you'd had?
Nah, I'd had a lot over the Warriors career, because I always just led with my head.
Yeah.
But probably up until I was like 24, 25, I'd never really hit, like, I reckon I could get hit in the head with a bat and it wouldn't affect me. and then just one, I remember versus one of the Burgess brothers, not the twins and not Sam, the other one. I forgot his name. That's
his not head. George, that, nah.
Maybe Luke? Luke?
Oh, Luke, yeah, yeah.
Luke, yeah. I remember I just coming out of the line and just hit his hip, collecting my head, and I was out for a long time. Like, I was knocked out, and when I woke up, like, I was on a stretcher, and, like, someone was like pulling the hairs on my leg and like rubbing a steel thing on my foot, and I couldn't feel it, and I was like so scared. I was like kind of like crying on the inside, like just speechless. But went to hospital, blah blah blah, came back. Everything was sweet. Like everything was sweet. It was just like I just got so smashed that my body was like, oh man, too many bats to the head. And then I played 2 weeks later, and then after that I just like kept like getting rattled.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. Like my head strength had just gone down.
Yeah.
And I remember like that was when HIAs had come in. I'd go for HIAs quite a bit and pass them. And then I'd be like, pass the test during the week. But then the same thing would happen. Like I'd just be seeing stars, blah, blah, blah. And I remember like a couple of years later, Bodie and Thompson was saying to me, bro, you should think about having a year off. Like the amount of head knocks you've had is more than like people that I've played with since, you know, I was young. And he was a bit of a vet.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, no, I will, bro. didn't really think anything of it until, I think it did have an effect on me big time, actually.
Yeah, that's interesting. When you were going out on the field, were you feeling sweet, or did you know deep down that you weren't quite right, even though you're going out there?
No, I always felt sweet. Like,
felt sweet. You're just getting knocked out way easier.
But, I didn't, I never changed, like, Cappy used to tell me, like, you need to just hold fire, but, like, stop coming out of the line.
Yeah.
Because that's when your head's getting rocked. And I was like, I will do that. But that was kind of my thing, like, just coming from inside out or outside in.
Yeah.
And then, so I wasn't actually worried. Like, I didn't, when I would get, like, half knocked out, I wouldn't care. Like, I'd just be like, fuck, was that a good shot? That was kind of all I cared about. Like, did he fold? Or... and they'll be like, no, he didn't. And I'll be like, okay. So that was all I was really worried about. And then, I probably went to England in a real bad headspace, obviously from Canberra. Mm. And me and my wife had a few troubles with what was to be our first child. That was like right before we went over too. So I was just rattled, and like I didn't handle that well. Like looking back, I should have just stayed. You know, when something like that happens, you don't. But I just kind of rolled with it.
So what did you do?
No, I went to the UK.
Oh, going to the UK. Yeah,
but my wife stayed back because she miscarried.
Oh, far out.
Yeah, so I was like, I think that's like how fucked up I was mentally, like to even come up with that decision.
Yeah.
Like I was just so, was like trying to run away from everything.
Yeah. And how was she? How was she throughout? Did she support that decision, or that's a hard decision to support?
Yeah. It happened like a few weeks beforehand.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that you learn and you learn from, you know. I was selfish. But I wasn't intentionally doing it. I was just where my head was at the time.
So you went over by yourself?
I went over by myself, and I was thinking, like, she'll come over the next year, because things had fallen through with the Audi truck and the original club, and she couldn't really come over and live with the brother, Wellington. But then once we were playing, like, I got knocked out a couple of times, and I remember, like, almost having a punch up with the coach, because he said something to me, but I thought he was having a go at me because I'd like hurt my shoulder. And then what happened? I walked past the coach's office and he goes, how are you? And I was like, and I'd just been knocked out like twice. And he was like, you good to play? And I was like, to be honest, my shoulder's like pretty fucked. And he goes, mate, you're always injured. I'd love to see you when you're not injured.
Yeah.
And then I thought he was saying that to me, like, you're faking it.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, well, you'd fucking be injured too if you're playing like me, cunt. And he was like, what? And I was like, yeah, what do you mean, what? Like, I was like, what do you mean, what? You want me to fucking fuck your shoulder up right now? This is like in the coaches. There's like five coaches. They're like, hey, Gubby, chill out, mate. I was like, nah, this guy's fucking. And I was like tearing up. Like, that's how rattled I was. I was like crying, like trying to get at the coach. And he was like, I did not mean that. I did not mean that. And then I was like, consoled myself outside.
Yeah.
And then in my head, I came up with this plan, like, okay, the CEO hasn't found out about this. I'm going to go to his office. I'm going to ask for, say I'm buying a house. I want to pay advance. And then I'm just going to take as much money as I can and fly home. And I was like, oh, I went up to it, like, obviously dried my eyes. I was like, I think his name was James. I was like, hey, James, my wife's just, we're just about to settle on a house. Could I get like a 6 month pay advance? And he was like, oh, we don't have the money. And he goes, I can give you this amount. And I was like, oh yeah, that'll be fine. Just send it through. And then like, he sent me the money. And then I was just like, I was out, bro.
What do you mean you're out? Did you just fly home?
Yeah, I didn't play the last game. And then I just went home. And then that was it.
True. And you had another year to go.
Yeah. Yeah. But they ended up getting relegated. The boys ended up getting relegated. But I could have gone back, but I was just like, I couldn't. Like, I'd already burnt my bridges there. Like, but they got rid of that staff, and they weren't, like, the physios and that were cool lads. I just, me and the coach obviously had that falling out, which is pretty hard to come back from. And that was 50% him not knowing how to talk to people, and then 50% me being mentally unstable.
So did you realize at this time that this was probably the end of your career, or were you happy to be walking away at this point, or were you expecting to keep playing?
Nah, I was like, I just wanted to not play for a while, you know. Yeah. But I wasn't like, oh, I'm gonna have a break and try play again.
Mm.
I was just like, I just need to go home, because I wouldn't say, like, I had depression, but I didn't not have depression, if you, like, like, I was just, and, yeah, I don't know what, like, I knew that something wasn't right with me.
Yeah, it sounds like depression, but.
Yeah. I mean, it ticks a few of the boxes, you know. It took me a while to come right. I lived with my parents for ages, and then kind of just floating around Wellington, but that was good for me, like just catching up with old mates and kind of just doing things I did before I started playing, you know, like working for my old man and that sort of stuff. And then opportunities came up to go to other teams on minimum wage, but I was got to the point where I was like, man, like for me to play well, because I wasn't good enough to play at like 90% intensity, I had to go, like, I had to be go so hard to be an NRL player, to be NRL quality, whereas, like, a lot of my mates, they were so good, you know, like, that they didn't have to be, like, almost insane to play well. They'd just be like, oh, I was a bit off tonight. I'll be like, fuck, you were good, bro. Yeah, mine was like, you're off tonight. Fuck, you're woeful, you know. So I don't know. It was like, is the juice worth the squeeze? Like, what am I, am I trying to get out of this? And like, is it going to, I don't know. I just took a step back and I was like, I'd rather just still work a normal job and be happy than play NRL and just be like anxious and where I was at mentally at the time.
Yeah. Did you miss the locker room chat, or by this stage you're struggling so much mentally that you weren't really enjoying that side of the game either anymore?
No, I did miss it, but I was still like in all, like I was in like the Warriors group chat and like the Raiders group chat too, because I was like, oh, you know, I was the main contributor, so I was in touch with everyone. But I don't know. Yeah, I did miss like the actual, I used to actually enjoy pre-seasons when I was like focused and just being around people like working hard.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have the desire to do it again, if you know what I mean. It sounds weird, like ungrateful, but it was, I don't know, it's just so intense. Oh, and I've got to the stage where, like, when I was putting myself in intense situations, like, I was almost becoming, like, too intense.
Yeah, well, you can't go into a preseason, like you said, half-assed, because it's just so tough, especially these league ones that are heard stories about, man, just absolutely brutal. You've got to fully commit to that. Did you give Union a go? Because I remember, obviously I was at the Hurricanes at the time, I remember whispers about you potentially coming in or giving the NPC a crack. Was that ever a real option for you?
I did come back and I played a club season. Mm. And then I went up to Rugby League Park. And I remember talking, walking past Plumtree, who was the coach of the Canes.
Yeah.
And he was like, let me know when you're ready, mate. And I was like, is this guy saying I'm ready? Like, I'm ready. And it was, I ended up doing like heaps of training of the academy. But it wasn't like, I don't know, the academy was just Wellington Rugby Academy run so shit. Just like a bunch of kids go to the gym at 6 a.m. for free, they get a t-shirt. Like, the trainer's friggin' mean, but like, they don't run it well. Like, they just go to early to the gym and do a gym session. And then like, he was like, yeah, I want you to come to the academy and learn the game, blah blah blah. And then like, 4 days a week was just the gym, and I was thinking, man, I'm already like already built, brother. Like, I'm already the finished product to teach me the game. But I was ended up just friggin' wrestling, and like, we'd do wrestling sessions.
Yeah.
And like, I'd been wrestling for so long, and I was wrestling versus like 18-year-olds and stuff like that. They were doing their first session. It was pretty crack up. And then I didn't get taught anything about like the game, and I was thinking like, okay, sweet, it can't be that hard. And then playing my first year with Marist, Prems, like they'd like kick the ball out, and I'd be like, oh, fuck, like, what do I do here? And they've already like formed the line out, and they're running, and I'm offside, like, just all that stuff. And I realized, like, okay, no,
yeah.
I'm never going to be ready for this. I think you need to be switched on for the game. Like, I could do the physical stuff and the tackling and the carrying, but I just had no idea about, like, even when a pod was running at me, I'd be lining up to hit the first receiver, but obviously it goes to the middle guy. But that took me like half a season to learn. Like, rugby is, I can see why people take so long to adapt to it.
Yeah, you got to give it time, mate. I just saw today Crichton being offered 1.6 to make the move. Like, there's someone at similar position to you, built like you. How do you reckon someone like him would go?
Oh, I think he would adapt a lot faster than me. Like, I think he's a private school kid, so he would have played a lot of Union.
Yeah, I heard he was quite good at Union, yeah.
Yeah, but even still.
You look at Roger as well, eh? Like,
it's such a big difference from, like, going, playing schoolboy rugby, then playing NRL, and then trying to play Super Rugby, do you know what I mean? Like, you're playing against kids, people that have been, like, training full-time and that.
Yeah.
And they're seeing that same shape over and over. That's why I like have so much respect for Roger, even though people are like, oh, this, that about Roger. But man, like, to even be as good as he was, and like, he was nowhere near his potential in Union, in my opinion. But you just need time in the saddle. Do you know what I mean?
100%. He's still an All Black. Like, not many people can say that.
Yeah.
He's right, and pretty crazy and good. Do you think it's right call from him, go back to the Warriors? He's going to be unreal next year, eh?
Yeah, he's the man. He's the man, like, as a player and as a person. I think, like, whatever decision he made is the right decision for him. Because, I don't know, he's just one of those guys, like, he's just such a genuine lad. Like, if you had him, he's the lad.
The ultimate lad.
Yeah, he's the ultimate lad. He's like gold-plated PS, what is it? PS10 lad.
So then anyway, you get into your Portaloo business. We've heard a little bit about that. But then what's the sort of plans with that? Is that a big, what's your mission there? Just give me the sort of 10-year goal for you and your Porter Kings.
Yeah, got the 5-year plan in there.
Five-year, okay, let's go 5.
Yeah, just keep growing. Pretty much. I don't know. It's the Portaloo game, brother. You know the Portaloo game.
So well.
Yeah, man, it can just flip on its head in a minute. But, no, I enjoy it. It's obviously, I don't see myself being in the truck forever, but I do enjoy Like, I genuinely enjoy going to people's sites and, like, just yarning with them. I got a Filipino guy that works with me, and he kind of does the cleaning and I do the yarning.
That's the way. That's perfect for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And what, expanding it? Like, obviously, it's mainly in Wellington at the moment, eh? Or only in Wellington?
Yeah, only in Wellington. No, I think I'll just stay in Wellington. There's enough, like, stuff down here in Wellington. I mean, I don't want to be too greedy, you know. I was happy with a minimum wage NRL there. I can't be too greedy and go for, you know, that max Portaloos contract.
Mate, I think you could be a bit more ambitious. I think there'll be a lot of people, especially down in Christchurch after a Charlie Gabb Portaloo.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what sort of feedback it gets. You know, might send a couple down on the Inter-Islander.
Yeah, oh mate, well that's good stuff. And what a story. I didn't realise there was so much going on in your gig, especially how long it took you to sort of crack it. But what a cool yarn. But obviously thousands of questions for you, mate. Like, looking forward to this. I know we've gone a little bit longer than I probably expected to, but we'll try and fly through some of these.
Yeah, yeah.
Ask Charlie if he's done any hard army camps.
Yep, I've done some harder. I don't know who that's from, but at Warriors, we did camps at pretty much all the teams, but Warriors, we did this thing called Camp Hell.
Yeah.
Camp Hell, and we did it twice. The first time they said, we're going away for like a team bonding camp. And we're like, oh, this is good, everyone's going. And then we met up in Papakura at this like lunchroom, we're having a nice lunch. And then they just like took groups away and like put bags over their heads. But like, we didn't know, just saw like, I remember someone goes, fuck, they're putting bags on their heads. And everyone was like, fuck, we're doing an army camp. And we got out there and they're like, you know, like, get on the ground, you piece of shit. Like, talking to you like that. And we're like, okay, how hard can it be? Blah, blah, blah. So we'd do like burpees, but does that like 12 o'clock in the afternoon, like do burpees. And then they go, okay, everyone has to do whatever it is, like 100 push-ups, 1K run, 100 burpees, blah, blah, blah. And they go, and then we're done. And we're like, oh, what the? Okay, sweet. So we did it. And then they were like, who didn't do them all? Put your hand up. And then, like, no one put their hand up. And then they're like, because we had people watching and, like, all these people came out that were watching, like, hiding. Like, who didn't do them all? And then, like, some people, like, put their hand up, and they're like, okay, you guys stand over there. And then there were some people that didn't put their hand up. You guys stand over there too. Like, they goes, everyone that did them all, you're going to keep doing burpees, and these people are going to watch you. Man, that probably went from, like, 4 o'clock to, like, 6:30 at night. And then we're like, okay, sweet, that's it. And it was just, like, I don't even know what happened over the next 3 days, but there was, like, no sleep. They, like, sleep deprived us.
That's right.
And then just made us do like real, 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 real hard stuff that you wouldn't think you could do, like carry, you know, like tires and logs. And I remember like putting it on my shoulder and being like, oh, fuck, I probably carry this like 5 meters. And they're like, all right, we're going 20K. And they're like, and if it touches the ground, like we're starting again. Oh, and you're just like in so much pain after like 5 seconds, but somehow you just keep going.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 doing that. And then you've got calluses on your feet. And the last one that was actually saved the day was like midnight. And there was 40 of us. I think there was 40 people in the camp. And they had 38 20-liter cans. And you just, so in lines of 20, you had to like pass them up to the end until the end person didn't have one. He had to run to the front.
Oh, hell, yeah.
Yeah, and we were supposed to travel 2K doing that. So like 2K of passing the things. And then one group kept dropping it. And in that group, it was like Nani Lamapi, Saliva Havili, and this guy, Brad Abbey. And it was between Saliva, Nani, and Brad that they kept dropping it. And every time they drop it, they had to do 10 burpees. And everyone was like, fuck you, Nani. Like, and he's like, it's not me. It's Brad. And he abused Brad so bad. Like, but like, no one cared because we were so tired. And then I remember him, what he said was, Brad, you're the weakest cunt I've ever met in my life. And Brad was like, it's not me. It's not me. And then like 10 seconds later, Saliba Havili like passed out and just went face first into the concrete. And like everyone was like to the staff, like, fuck you, like, look what you did to our brother. And they were all like shitting themselves because he like smacked his head on the concrete and it was like pulsating on the ground through like lack of sleep, dehydration, blah, blah, blah. And then they're like, all right, everyone go inside. And they had a meeting and they're like, you can sleep now for 4 hours. And we're like soaking wet. Everyone just like went to sleep. But everyone was like, thanks, Lever. Like, he came back from hospital. And they're like, he's all right, guys. We're going to continue on. Everyone's like, thanks, Lever, like dapping him up. We still talk about that now, and I still think about the abuse that some of the boys cop all for Saliba keeping his mouth quiet.
Mate, no wonder you didn't want to do another preseason.
Yeah, we did that same camp the next year too, and after, it was
shocker.
Torture.
Okay, that's a good one. Okay, next one. Ask him about when he spent $300 on an outfit for a date.
Oh, fuck. That was when I was living with Sam Lousy. Yeah. And I was like, oh, can I borrow some clothes? Like, blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, nah, let's just go to the thing. Like, little did I know, he's just taking the piss out of me, seeing like what I thought was cool and how much money I was going to spend. And I brought like a, I don't know, like a pair of like Federation jeans and a fucking Rip Curl t-shirt or something. And then like went on the day, obviously came home at like 9:30 and he's like, how was it? Yeah, never heard from her again.
Oh, money well spent. Okay, next one. Why did he always leave skid marks in the toilet? Chad Townsend.
Oh, that's Chad. I lived with Chad for a couple of years.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, he was, but I did not leave skid marks. But one time I came home from, he was obviously playing in NRL, and I think I came home from a cup game, and he had done an Aussie, they call it a reverse kangaroo, where they go backwards on the toilet, and his whole thing was on the back of the toilet, like, gone rock hard, and I was just filthy, like, just got it, obviously.
And this inspired you to start a portal business.
From that moment, I was thinking, you knew. There's got to be a better way to clean this.
Okay, next question. Tell us about the time you rated yourself too highly.
Oh, yeah. I know who this is. This was at the Warriors when Steve Kearney took over. He had this board, like, every day after training you had to rate yourself 1 to 10 on how well you trained. Like, he must have brought it back from the Storm. It might have worked for them, but it definitely didn't work for the lads. And then so obviously 10 being like the best game ever played, and 1 being, I don't know, like you punched the ref before the game and you did not play. So there's 10 and then there's 1, and to be a NRL player, you need to be above 6 every time.
Yeah.
And then so, like, trainings, everyone was always too ashamed, like, even if they had a mean training, you know, because you didn't want to be the guy that gave themselves a 7. And then because how we'd do it too, you'd rate yourself, your rating would be there, and then they'd pull back the curtain, and then his rating for you would be there. And then, like, a couple of times people would give themselves a 7, you know, and you get a 6, and you just get, like, ooh. And there was one, I always used to just give myself a 6, like, and deservedly, I was a 6. And then we played the Dragons one day because we did it on game day. And it was the week that, like, Benny and a few boys got done for taking prescription drugs with Red Bull, as you do, you know, as you do.
Okay.
So we were missing 5 of our best players and we were meant to lose the game. It was quite a, like, emotional game. And I remember, like, going so hard. I scored a try and did, like, some fucking, like, some good tackles, like, right in front of the bench. Like, you know, put the elbow on, put a lot of shit in. And then Benny came up to me after the game and he goes, bro, you were a 7 or an 8. And then I was like, do you reckon? And he goes, easily. I was talking to the boys. We reckon, like, that might have been an 8. That might have been an 8. And I was like, nah, I'm not going to say 8. And then he's like, do it, man, do it. Like, it'll be fucking mint if you do 8. And then so I did 7. I did 7, and I was like, okay, so hopefully I'm an 8. And he like pulls back the curtain. 5. And I just remember looking over at Benny, and I was like, so cut, like so embarrassed. I got dropped the next week. And I was thinking, like, fuck, does this guy just G me out? He's just like pissing himself laughing. So I'll probably never forgive him for that one.
Was it a genuine stitch up, or was he? Did he genuinely think you played well?
No, he like because me and him got the same idea. Like playing well,
yeah,
is like you know hurts. Putting a bit of hurt in, yeah. Putting a bit of niggle in. But probably I wasn't putting it in the right areas, you know. I probably wasn't finding my front, tying in, kick chase, that sort of stuff. I was more just in the emotion of my 5 best mates getting dropped and absolutely destroyed in the media.
Oh, that is good stuff. Okay, next one. Best yarn from his time on Sweet Georgia.
Yeah, I don't know. I definitely had like some good times on there, but can't think of any like lad stories.
Okay, here's one. I went on his old man's boat once and he told me a yarn that he had a fling with Helen Clark. Is this true?
No. What the heck?
I'm guessing you just spun like that many yarns on those boats.
yeah, frick yeah. I probably did say that. In hindsight, I don't think Helen's my type.
Okay. What's the worst state you've ever picked a lure up in?
Oh, man. Like, I've only been in the game for a year and a half, but it definitely tests your character. that Wellington wind, probably 2 weeks ago, we had this wind that was like 190K on a Sunday, and I was thinking, like, fuck, here we go. Here we go, it's camp hell again. Woke up, there was already like 15 missed calls at like 7 a.m. And then like, I just like remember going to this guy's site because I was like, oh, you can clean it yourself. You can clean it yourself for free. And I just like, or I can clean it for 200. It's up to you. And it's like, you clean it. I was like, fuck. All right. Went in there, was cleaning it. And I remember it was just so rank. He's like, how do you do this? And I was, this is me. It's not actually that bad. Just get a soft bristles. And I'm just like gagging in my head. I'm thinking like, man, this I'm probably going to get cancer from this. But it's all part of the gig, mate. It's not all, you know, it's not all Instagram content and dropping off toilets.
What's the cancer theory? Is that from the smell?
Oh, just all the chemicals that I'm using to clean it. Like, I'm like breathing in, like, you know, I always watch freaking YouTube videos, like, this guy got cancer using Roundup, and I'm like, fucking Roundup. I'm using this shit's serious.
Oh, it's good stuff. Okay, next one. Where do you treat yourself on Fridays?
Every Friday, I go to Kilburnie Barbers. Did you ever go there?
I used to go there. Yeah, Mark. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. With Mark, and we always just obviously debrief on what's going wrong with society and whatnot. always get a packet of Camels or Dunhill Switch, and me, Mark Setti, a couple of other guys, Valentine, the OG there, we're just yarning, and fuck, I just power through the Codys, power through the Siggies, and then it gets to like 6 o'clock, absolutely tanked, and I got a Charlene's texting me to come home, you're on bath duty. I go home, just take the top off. Anything that smells like Siggy, take it off at the door. I'm going in on my undies, bath the kids, fall asleep with them. That's a standard Friday.
Oh, that's loving. Okay, next one. Fastest player you've played with?
Glenn Fishiahi, easy.
Oh, the fish, he was quick, eh? Yeah. Under 20s, in his prime.
Yeah.
Okay, toughest player you played with?
Played with overall toughness. Simon Mannering.
Oh, yeah.
But
tough.
The guy I used my captain on in the Waterlad League team, Jack Wyden.
Oh, yeah. I've been watching him ever since you picked him up. And,
yeah.
Mate, he is tough, eh?
Yeah.
He must have smoked you at a young age because, did he?
Yeah, you always remember who smoked you. But, nah, he didn't smoke me. But I don't know. Maybe he did. Maybe it was a straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, maybe it was one of those 1,000 head knocks. Okay, the goat warrior. This could be similar answer, is it?
Goat warrior. For me, Ben Modolino.
Oh, Modolino, yeah. The hitman.
Yeah, he's a 3-time player of the year. I think people forget how dominant he was in a team that wasn't going well. And Simon Mannering. And then obviously you have to put SJ's in the conversation now.
Yeah, what a year.
Yeah, maybe Warrior. Big fan of Manu Vardabhai.
Yeah. Poor try scoring machine.
Yeah, he's a machine, full stop, brother.
Okay, last question. Best piece of advice you have for a Woodlad listener?
Ooh.
Yes.
Advice.
These are all hopefully going to go in a book one day, and I reckon Charlie Gubbs is going to be the first one, almost like the back cover.
I didn't prepare for this, so probably just...
As he pulls out his notebook.
Well, I didn't prepare for this. Babe, bring that over. Nah. Probably just like, have you seen the movie Pursuit of Happiness?
Yeah, I have. Will Smith,
one of the greats. You know, when he's telling his son, like, when you've got a dream, just hold on to it. You know, don't let people get in the way of you and your dream. Like, even if it's delusional, like, the universe or God, if you're a God-fearing man like myself, will put things in place that will help get you there if you stay on course with your dream.
Oh, I knew it. There's the first chapter of the Woodlad best piece of advice book quotes, because that is good. Even if it is from a movie, like, that is impressive. Like, what a way to finish one of the great podcasts. Like I did mention at the start, I've been hanging out for this for, I reckon, at least 2 years, and absolutely worth the wait. That was absolute laugh and some real seriously good yarns, and awesome to hear your story too, by the way. Like I knew bits of it, but no, it was a crazy, crazy wee journey you've been on, and awesome to see you doing so well with the Porter Kings, and looking forward to following that, hopefully expanding the country and the place where everyone should be getting their Portaloos from.
Oh, thanks, Gemma, for being on. I'm not sure, you know, if we covered anything worthwhile, but maybe we can do a little collab Waterloo, something like that, down the track. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, like Waterloo, mate.
It was awesome being on, and I was nervous, and I hopefully I've pulled it off being on the guest, but I'm not sure that I have.
Oh, you've absolutely nailed it. This is this thing that you've had throughout your whole career. You've played so well, but you always feel like you haven't done enough. You've got like this imposter syndrome, but mate, that was the best ever.
Oh, yeah. Well, my brother will be the first to let me know if it was decent or not.
No, I appreciate it, mate.
No, all good. Thanks, Jammer. Thanks for having me, brother.
You're a lad. Hey, guys, thanks for listening to this one. And if you've got this far, I'm hoping you enjoyed the episode, and I'm hoping you're a fan of the podcast. And if you are and you're keen to support, head over to woodlad.com and go and get yourself a Woodlad tee, cap or hoodie. And I'm super grateful for anyone who has got themselves something already. You are a true lad.